have the list?
Yes, sir.
Where is it? Is it buried?
Where did it go? It's buried over here. But there's...
There's more? House Committee on Revenue will come to order. We're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3397. Day?
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, this bill is about school districts' funding of public charter schools. Currently, for purposes of the distribution of the state school fund, a school district is directed to pay to a public charter school an amount per weighted average daily membership, ADMW, of the public charter school that is at least equal to 80% of the amount of school district's general purpose grant per ADMW for students in K through 8, and then 95% for students in grades 9 through 12. Now, what this bill does is to raise these percentages to 95% each, and then also it directs the school district to pay at least 95% of state or federal monies if they are received by the school district for its public charter schools. And that's what the bill does.
Very good. We have a number of people who want to testify today, so we're going to hold some fairly strict time limits. The first panel that we have are the people actually who actually brought this bill, I think, and so we're going to start with Lynn Lundquist, Corinne Karen, and Vanessa Wilkins for 15 minutes, please. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Chair Barnhart, members of the Revenue Committee. My name is Karen Hikas, and I'm the Executive Director of the Northwest Center for Educational Options. And we are the group, indeed, that has brought this bill. It is sponsored by Representatives Comp and Springer and Senators Verger and Morse. And with me, I have Vanessa Wilkins, who is with Seed Strategies, and she conducted a study of the funding and how it works for charter schools about a year ago, and she's going to present the results of that study. And then we also have Lynn Lundquist, who I believe you know, former Speaker of the House, and he's on our board. There is a quick one-pager for you on our organization. We're the state charter school organization. Most of the charter schools are members, and this is the priority of the charter schools in this state to have equitable funding. So we're here today to talk to you about that. And at this point, I'd like to turn it over to Vanessa to share the data with you. We engaged Vanessa because we knew that the funding for charter school students was inequitable, but we really didn't understand how the money flowed and how it all worked and how inequitable it was. So we wanted to really look at that. And school funding is complicated, and I'm a former high school English teacher, so I decided to find a Harvard MBA person who could do the math and figure this out for us.
Okay, well, besides being a Harvard MBA, I'm also a graduate of Portland Public Schools and think very highly of all of our public schools in Oregon. Thank you, committee members, for hearing this bill and for listening to our testimony this morning. My name is Vanessa Wilkins, and I'm here to testify for you today regarding the inequitable funding of public charter schools in the state of Oregon. As Karen said, my firm conducted a study for Northwest Center for Educational Options last year that looked at what was actually happening in terms of funding for charter schools versus their district counterparts. I'm here today to report to you on our findings. First, let me tell you about the data and the methodology. The essential question that we sought to answer was how much public funding per student do charters receive compared to their district counterparts? We got all of our data directly from the Oregon Department of Education. We were very fortunate to have the assistance of both Brian Reeder, the Assistant Superintendent of Reporting and Analysis at ODE, and also of Michael Wiltfong, who administers the state school fund. They pulled all of the data directly from the Oregon Department of Education's financial database. We looked at the 08-09 school year, as that was most recent available. We did not consider any private donations on the district side or on the public charter school side. We did not consider any startup grants, as they are just that. And we used fall enrollment as our denominator, which is the number of students who enrolled on October 1st in all public schools. We looked at all 197 districts. We did pull out five for incomplete data. So what did we find? Frankly, the results were shocking. Charters educate more than 2.7% of Oregon's public school students, yet they receive only 1.5% of the funding. This means that on average, charter school students receive 55% of the funding of their district counterparts. So what does this mean in terms of dollars? Charters receive $4,591 less per student than their district counterparts. Most people who understand charter school financing in the state have the misperception that this is all due to facilities financing, the fact that districts can issue bonds to fund their buildings, whereas charter schools actually have to pay rent, which obviously increases the operating costs for charter schools. So we looked at this, and surprisingly, we found that facilities make up only a small part of this difference. As you can see, on the district side, revenue for debt service makes up $950 out of the $10,374. It's only $7 on the charter school side. But the bigger story here is that charter schools still have an incredible inequity in their funding. This disparity equates to charters receiving 61% of the funding of their district counterparts if you're to take out the revenue for debt service. The other major finding of our study was that the funding is highly variable based on the district, but that most districts fall somewhere between 40 and 60% in terms of funding for their charter students versus their regular students in their district schools. As you can see here, this is a frequency distribution of all the districts in the state of Oregon, and what it shows you is that most districts indeed pay charters significantly less than the 80% intended by current Oregon state law. And indeed, most of them fall somewhere between the 40 and 60%. Now, you might notice that there is a small group of outliers over here in the 100% column. There are seven districts in Oregon that have converted to charter status because they are small, remote districts that operate only one school. There are a variety of reasons why they might do so, but the main point here is that these districts are able to access funding streams not available to regular charter schools because they go directly to the state, federal sources, and local sources to get their funding. On a dollar amount, this means that these small districts do considerably better than charter schools in a larger district. They're still not getting the same funding as their district counterparts, so this is not a reflection of any disparity there. But what I wanted you to understand from this slide is that when you take these seven charter schools that are districts out of the equation, the picture gets significantly worse for charter schools that reside in larger districts. This means that these schools are only receiving $5,182 on average compared to their district counterparts. This is clearly inequitable, leaving charter school students in the larger districts less than half of what their district counterparts get. It's actually 49%. So part of the big problem here is that districts have access to public resources not available to charter schools. A full 31% of the funding for districts in Oregon comes outside the state school fund. And as I told you earlier, only 9% of this difference is attributable to the facilities funding, the revenue for debt service. And most of the other funding outside the state school fund is still based on headcount that includes the headcount in the charter schools within that district. House Bill 3397 would mandate that charters receive 95% of all funding based on headcount that includes the charter schools, leveling the playing field for all public school students in Oregon. Thank you for hearing my testimony this morning.
Thank you. Lynn?
Co-Chair Barnhart, Berger, and the rest of the committee, first of all, thank you for hearing this bill today. And I do want to say that your reputation as a thoughtful committee is well, versed throughout these halls. And I really appreciate that because it's not great to have a committee of that makeup. This bill is really a simple bill.
Excuse me. Then we all know who you are.
Okay, I'm sorry.
For the record, please.
All right. Thank you, Chair Barnhart. I'm Lynn Lundquist from Powell Butte, who's not smart enough to stay out of these halls and retire, I guess. So that lays it all on the line. This bill is really a very simple bill. It's simply about equity. This is exactly the same issue that we dealt with, and I'm not sure any of you were here in 1997 when, because of Measure 5, we finally reached equity. The legislators had been working on that for about three biennia, but it was in that session that we finally reached that goal. And it was a big deal. It was a big deal to me. It was a big deal to the education community. I still remember the outburst in the House chambers, which I know is not supposed to happen, when the state school fund was passed in 1997 because it allowed all students in the state to have the same equitable funding. This bill is probably not as big a deal to the education community as a whole as that was back in 1997, but let me tell you this. This is a big deal to the charter school bill, schools, because it's a significant difference in funding, as you were just informed. Now, I'm sure, quite sure, you'll probably hear some come out and testify and say, you know, this is just not the right time to do this. The schools are having a very difficult time. I understand that. But I'd ask the question, when is the right time to do this? I simply think that that even with this tough situation, it is right, it is logical, and it's morally responsible to make sure that all kids in our state have the same choices when it comes to the school they attend and be funded at the same level. I don't know if there's 100 students in these hearing rooms today or not, but let's just visualize for a second that there are 100 with the overflow room. And let's say they represent all the students in the state of Oregon. As you just heard, a little less than 3% of the students are charter school students. So the question, the very specific question that I want to pose is this. Which one of you want to pick out the three students that will be funded at a lesser level than the rest of them? That's a tough question. This bill simply wants to avoid that so that neither you nor anyone else has to make that tough decision that we can have equity for all of our students throughout the state. That's really the basis of the bill. Again, thank you for considering this. I know that you're passionate about education, and that's why I'm here today. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? I would say if there are any technical questions, this would be the panel to ask. Unless you had some other remarks.
I do.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Chair Barnard,
go ahead.
Thank you so much. I'll be quick. Karen Hikas, Northwest Center for Charter School. What am I? Northwest Center for Educational Options. It's early. First of all, I'd just like to say that House Bill 3397 is really not about charter schools. It's not about the politics of charter schools, the merits of charter schools, the demographics, the student achievement. Those are all worthy conversations to have, and we would welcome having those conversations as we regularly do. This bill is about students. Public school students, and whether or not we do have funding equity in this state. Again, former high school English teacher, not a math whiz, but my understanding of our complicated funding system for K-12 is that it is student-based. We don't base our funding on how high the schools perform. We don't base the funding on the types of kids in the schools, except for very certain risk factors. There's additional funding for them. We don't base our funding on where they live like we used to. We base our funding on the children in the school and how many children are in the school. If we want to base our funding on something different, I think that's a broader conversation. But at this point, that's how we do it. And so we really do believe in equity as a state. And so this is kind of inconsistent. This big disparity is inconsistent from my perspective. Inconsistent with our values as a state. We did name our report Unintended Consequences, and we did that intentionally because we are not anti-public school system, anti-public schools, anti-school districts. Charter schools in this state, the vast majority, do not really want vouchers but settle for charters. We really want to be in the public school system, and we are in the public school system. Charter schools are public schools. They're part of the school system in this state. We don't think anyone's malevolently shortchanging our kids. If I get a check and it has my name on it, and then someone tells me that I have to sign it over to you, I might resent you. But the question is, whose money is it? Is it the children's money? Is it the district's money? Is it the school's money? It raises these bigger issues. This bill would solve a problem that we're becoming increasingly aware of. It would level the playing field for children in charter schools. And we do want to note that this bill does not address transportation money or facility money. So while we're calling this funding equity, it's actually not true equity because we are not asking for charter school students to receive facility funding. And as you heard, they can't pass bonds to fund their facilities. So they pay their lease or their mortgage out of their reduced funding. Transportation is an issue for charter schools. We want charter schools to be able to serve a broad diversity of children. If we can't provide transportation to them, that limits the number of folks who can access them. That's a systemic issue. That's not because the charters don't want to serve more diverse students. Some of our charters are very diverse students. And I also just wanted to let you know that you've probably heard about a lot of private money going into charter schools in other states, but I wanted to let you know that is not the case in Oregon. At our last survey of Oregon charter schools, the highest percentage of any charter school's annual budget that's private money is 1%. So that's not a factor here. They are reliant on the public school dollars to educate their children. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And now questions. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wondered if you could make a clarification for me. I've received many, many emails about this bill, and several of them say support this bill, vote against closing, vote yes so that my school doesn't close. Is there anything in this bill about school closure or closing charter schools?
Representative Gelser, Chair Barnhart, there's nothing in this bill about closing charter schools, and I had not heard that messaging, but I have heard from a number of charter schools over the past couple of years that they are on the verge of closing because their funding is so dire.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair? Thank you. I just think it's important. I chair the Education Committee, and we frequently receive letters, and it causes great distress for families if they feel that their school is in danger of being closed. And I just think it's really important to put on the record this is not a school closure bill. We're not talking about closing anybody's school, regardless of whether this bill passes or does not pass. The legislature is not making any decisions about the continuation of any charter school or any student's enrollment. Nobody is at risk.
And we're getting head nods all around. Yes, Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you all for your testimony, for being here. I'm not the expert on education, nor on charter schools that Representative Gelser and others are, but one of the things that has attracted me to the idea of charter schools is the flexibility of charter schools to meet individual needs of communities and students and so on. And I recognize that there are a lot of different kinds of charter schools that are there for lots of different reasons. And appreciate Mr. Lundquist's comment about the difficult situation we're in with respect to the budget. So I wonder if any of you or all of you might like to comment on the different kinds of charter schools. I can say for myself that I'm a lot more comfortable thinking about this concept when it relates to nonprofit charter schools, and have some additional difficulty in thinking about for-profits. So I wonder if you might comment on that.
Go ahead.
Absolutely. Appreciate the question. Chair Barnhart, Representative Reed. First of all, the charter school law requires every charter school in Oregon to be a 501c3 organization, has to be a tax-exempt Oregon and federal-level nonprofit. There are a few charter schools that contract with for-profits. Those are mostly the virtual schools. But technically, legally, they're all nonprofit, if you will. The vast majority of our charter schools are brick-and-mortar, located physically in communities where children go. There is a wide range of charter school educational models, everything from Waldorf, Montessori, arts focus, performing arts, you know, hands-on environmental science. There's just a wide range. We have about 106 charter schools right now, and they really run the gamut of the types of educational models.
I'll follow up then.
But please, yes.
Thank you. So does it, is there room to specify, and appreciate your comment about the 501c3 nature and some of the relationships with for-profit virtual schools, is there room in the bill, or would it, I suppose it would be a policy choice for the committee and the legislature, but what would your reaction be to an amendment that might make it clear that we're talking about the nonprofit sector?
Representative Reed, Chair Barnhart, There are a lot of other bills in the building regarding the virtual schools, and Representative Gelser could probably speak to that, but there's a lot of stakeholders talking about separating the virtual schools out of the charter law anyway. So we're kind of anticipating that, and I mean, I think we're amenable to revisions and to supporting our brick-and-mortar charter schools. Like I said, we right now don't fund schools based on the type of model, but if we do separate virtual schools out and separate them based on the fact they are virtual schools, then this wouldn't apply to them, right?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's just a signal that one that might be something I might be interested in.
Representative Gelser, on this topic?
Yes.
Yeah, please.
Mr. Chair, and this is to Representative Reed's question, the legislation we're working on in the House Education Committee would, in fact, pull those virtual schools out from the charter school statute and make them their own local education agencies, and what we are negotiating is what percentage of ADM they would receive, recognizing that their expenditure needs are differently and that there are for-profit companies involved in them.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I think the questions from Representative Gelser and Representative Reed have illustrated the fact that the debate around education and charter schools is wide-ranging and very complex and gets into a number of different areas, and especially for a committee that is more used to debating the finer points of property tax law, this may be a relatively new issue, at least for me, on a committee. So I'm wondering if you can dial into this bill just a little bit more and talk about the specifics of what this particular bill does and the rationale behind that bill. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Certainly.
Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you for the question. This bill is pretty simple. What it does, and as you heard from our data, you know, the law right now requires that charter school students receive a portion of the state school fund, but it does not entitle them to receive any other public funds, federal, local, state. Charter schools were not entitled to the school improvement funds, for instance, from last session, or the stimulus funds. So this bill has some simple language that basically says charter school students will receive 95% of all public funds that's based on headcount or characteristics of the students. For instance, if it's money for low income, if the charter school has whatever percentage of low income kids they have, that low income money would flow to them. Or if the district gets money for third graders, or, you know, it would be based on the characteristics of the children and just the headcount of the children in the charter school. And Lynn and I have talked about this a great deal. We kind of started with the 5%. You know, what's a realistic administrative rate? Because we work with districts. I mean, I've come from districts and ESDs. We know that districts have oversight responsibilities for charter schools. They need to have some revenue to oversee and to perform those duties. So we believe that a 5% administrative rate is pretty standard in the public arena, and that's what the bill does. Really, it doesn't address transportation money. It doesn't address facility money. It's just public money that's based on headcount. Thank you.
Representative Gelser. I'm sorry. Representative Bentz was next, and then Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious. The issue is equity, but are we saying that there, a considerably better job would be done if this additional money was given to the schools? My observation of the charter school in my district suggests that the job being done there is excellent. I'm all in favor of equity. I'm just curious how you would measure the benefit from these additional dollars to these kids. And I want to move away from that equity word for a moment and just tell me what that additional money is going to do.
Okay. Well, Chair Barnhart, Representative Benson, and Representative Bailey, in response to your question a little bit at the same time, as you said, it's complicated a little bit, the charter school, how it's funded and all that sort of thing, and what you do with the money. The reason I got involved in this specifically was because we started a charter school in our community. And as the old saying goes, when you get involved in the details, you really find out what's going on. In direct response to your question, taking 80% of the funding and trying to, and we do the best job we can with this, and I think charter schools are doing a great job of what they have. But that doesn't mean they couldn't do better. For example, in our school, we have place-based education, which means the students are going to go out in the community and do a lot of their work, service learning. We are having an extremely difficult time finding the resources to even get a bus to allow that to happen. We have the principals on a volunteer basis. So, you know, you do what you do, what you can with what you have. But, Representative Vance, I absolutely believe there is a relationship between input and output in education as well. It doesn't mean that money is a total answer, but it will allow their benchmarks to be reach a higher level of benchmarks. I absolutely believe that. I spent a lot of time in the education arena. So it simply is, I can't say to you, you know, we're going to do it that far, but it will be and allow the charter schools to do even a better job than they're doing today.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, could I also answer?
Yeah, please.
I would just like to say we know that all of the public schools in our state do not have stable funding or adequate funding. If we were funding education on what we believe a high-quality education costs, we would be using the quality education model. We all know that. We are not doing that. So we all know we're in that similar boat in the sense of we could provide a higher quality education if we had additional revenue. That, we means the whole entire K-12 system. But imagine, as a charter school, you have whatever the variance is, 55%, you know, of the dollar, or 60 or 65, whatever that is, it's significantly less than what districts have. And districts, it's hard enough for districts to follow all of the, you know, statutes that they have to follow. And charters have to follow all the same statutes. We do highly, you know, NCLB basically gutted the flexibility, a lot of the flexibility that charter schools have. We have to do it, you know, No Child Left Behind, highly qualified, AYP, and we always have had to follow the state content standards, take the state tests, participate in PERS, participate in public contracting law, and all of those things that are hard for districts to meet. So imagine how much harder it is for charter schools. The whole, you know, adversarial us versus them, we hate that. This isn't about that. This is about equity for kids and providing a fair share of the funding we do have, even though we know it's not high enough.
Thank you. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that led into my question quite well. Ironically, earlier this week, the Corvallis School Board heard contract renewal for Muddy Creek Charter School in our district. And the charter school had been asking to adjust their contract from 80% of ADM to 90% of ADM, and we're disappointed that the district decided that it could not do that. And from the article, it says, because the Corvallis School District is currently facing a budget deficit of about $1.5 million next year, board members were hesitant to allocate additional funding to Muddy Creek. Quote, we are going to be making cuts that will impact programs and students at all of our schools, said board member Bill Timpass. It doesn't seem right to give more to one school while we are having to take away from others. And I guess my question is this the right time to be providing an increase to some schools as we are making budget reductions in every other school in the state, or is this something that we should be looking at in conjunction with how do we infuse appropriate resources into all of our public schools? Because it's, I don't think it's adversarial, but when these contracts go forward and the charter proposals go forward and make their application to the board, part of the argument that they make and that they made to me as a board member is we can do this innovative thing and we can do it for less money. So it's a little bit what the charter proposers signed up for when they came. Why would we change it now when we're cutting everybody else?
Representative Gelser, Chair Barnhart. As I said earlier, there's not a right time. Excuse me. Then there will never be a right time. There just won't happen. It simply boils down to the fact when you say, and I understand it completely, whether it's Corvallis or Crook County that I belong to or anything else, they are going to have to make some cuts. But they also need to recognize that the charter schools in their district is operating with 70-80% of what they're doing, so they have cuts to make even before they got there. Mm-hmm. When we started the charter school, we made cuts, so to speak, because we didn't have 100%. We had 80% of just the state school fund and none of the other sources. So, you know, there is not a perfect answer for that. It's just the fact that I personally believe that it's the right thing to do. It's the logical thing to do to treat all kids, because the money from the state is supposed to go to the kids. It's not supposed to go to one set of kids versus another set of kids. It's all based on what we're going to support, whether it's 5,700 or whatever the case of the state school fund happens to be. So, you know, the answer, there's no perfect answer, but I find it difficult to believe that we should separate out a particular class of kids.
Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions for this panel? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate your testimony, and you did stay until we got to questions within the 15 minutes you asked for. So we went over that after with the questions. That we have a lot of other people to testify this morning. I would ask that those who come up restrict your testimony to as much as possible, about 2.5 minutes, and try to not simply repeat what other people have said, but to give us new information that you think might be useful to the committee as we consider this bill. Let's start with Caitlin Sundland. Ron, is it Brian? Bryn?
Brian.
Brian and Charles Arthur, please come forward. And we'll let the three of you decide who goes first, and please give your testimony. And state your name for the record first, please.
Co-Chair Barnhart-Berger, my name is Ron Bryan. I'm the director for Phoenix Charter School in Roseburg. We serve a population of about 200 at-risk students.
My name is Charles Arthur. I'm the founder of Arthur Academy Charter Schools, which exist in about 6 districts throughout the Portland area.
My name is Caitlin Sundin, and I'm a junior at the Leadership and Entrepreneurship Public Charter High School. So I've attended public schools, and I've attended a private Catholic college high school, but I chose to spend the past 2 years of my high school career at LEAP High, and I plan to continue all the way through graduation. I believe that LEAP is really preparing me for the future for several reasons. First of all, LEAP uses project-based learning to help students develop divergent thinking. Secondly, all LEAP students do internships, create business plans, and take AP English. All LEAP students take 4 years of English, math, and social studies. All LEAP students have to earn 27 credits to graduate and must get at least a C or higher to pass any class. Clearly, our standards are higher. LEAP is a school that helps its students embrace learning, and for that reason, I'm urging you to support House Bill 3397. Our student body is 65% low income and over 50% students of color. About one-fourth of our students have a disability. Most students who come to LEAP have already been at another high school and are looking for a school that better meets their college and career goals, which we well offer. We have many things going for us due to the dedication of our teachers, but we also feel the hardships of having less funding for education. Textbooks are hard to come by, field trips are uncommon, and the school has to hold rummage sales and other fundraisers just to pay for our simple activities like graduation. 31 of our 33 members of the first graduating class went to college, but we don't even have a building where they could receive their diploma, yet alone for our students to come and support them. We don't have enough materials to meet the needs of the students that we carry, which I find heartbreaking because I know how much we have to offer. Again, I urge you to support this bill because I know that Oregonians value equality for all students. Please look at me and affirm that I am worth the same funding as every other public school student. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Gentlemen.
Good morning. My name is Charles Arthur. Thank you for listening to my testimony this morning. I have started and operated 6 charter schools over the last 10 years in 6 different sponsoring school districts. We currently teach just over 1,000 students every day, and I think we have about 50 of them here today in this room or in this spillover. I've been teaching for over 40 years. I'd like to testify that we have been very happy with our sponsoring districts and look forward to finding even more ways in which we can cooperate and work together in mutually beneficial projects. We've never envisioned that our schools would operate in isolation or in competition with other schools. In the early years of our starting charter schools, from what I frequently heard from school districts, it was anticipated that sponsoring charter schools at the elementary level would require time, extra time, and resources by the districts in order to help manage the schools. However, over time, this has not proven to be the case. In both the schools and the districts, they have become more efficient. Our charter schools have become more self-sufficient. Our relationship with our sponsors now has become more a matter of a shared common mission. We believe that the oversight over the years has not proven to require 20% of the student funding from the student formula. At this level of funding, our school districts retain close to $150,000 each year just for oversight. This would pay for two full-time positions to oversee just one school, which of course is not needed. It does not seem possible to me that all of these funds were used just for oversight. We believe that the HB 3397 will correct this situation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. My concern, I think, is that just to address some of the previous comments, is that we've had cuts as well. But instead of being cut from 100%, we've been cut at less revenue and gone down. So what would the funding do for us? I think one of the things would be to restore a female counselor to help the kids, particularly with abuse issues, physical, sexual abuse, suicidal ideation, homelessness, that the at-risk kids often come to us with. That's been a tough thing to give up because it's often crucial to their success in making it in our school. Additional instructional time during the day and hopefully into the summer, the kids come to us averaging 4.5 years behind grade level in reading, 4.75 behind in math. And for them to go on and graduate, especially now with on-time requirements, is difficult enough, but the additional instructional time would certainly help these students succeed. And so the other thing, I think, is frankly bring our staff compensation up, perhaps at maybe as much as 85% of their public counterparts, their other public teachers. I think that the thing that concerns me the most, though, is just continually asking our community to make up the difference locally. Douglas County has often been among the leaders, unfortunately, in unemployment in Oregon, leading counties and even in the nation. And yet, because they support these kids in our community, they do this year after year, but it's a struggle. And I also feel we're taking away from other important local causes as the money shifted to these kids preferentially. That concerns me. Another hat I wear, finally, is I'm the immediate past chair of the Northwest Association for Accreditation Commission that accredits the schools in Oregon. And each year, seeing the schools that we lose, the primary reason that charter schools close is finances. And I think that's largely due to the inequities in finance that exist. So I think of a school like Listos, an inner city school serving Hispanic youth, great model, but they had to close for financial reasons. And so I'm concerned about how we address particularly the at-risk youth in our state and help them find pathways to college and careers. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Representative Wan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to take the opportunity to recognize Mr. Arthur. There's an Arthur Academy in Troutdale, and I can tell you in East County that has become an integral part of our community, along with Troutdale Elementary and Sweetbriar Elementary. I have friends and neighbors that have sent their children to that fine institution, and I'm just very pleased that he's down in Salem today. So thank you, Mr. Arthur.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you very much. We very much appreciate your testimony, and I appreciate the fact that you stayed within time. Others who will come after you will be pleased with that as well. The next panel I have is for four people, Katie Calhoun, Shannon McClure, Mason Mills, and Tara O'Neill. And I think we're going to need another chair. I called a panel of four because that was the way it was given to me, so I appreciate your coming this morning. Who wants to begin?
I'll begin.
Please.
My name is Katie Calhoun, and I'm a freshman at Alliance Charter Academy.
Please go ahead.
Okay. It's a public charter school in Oregon City. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to you about House Bill 3397. I'm fortunate to live in a district that offers the choice of either attending a public high school or a public charter school. I've chosen the public charter school, and my brother has chosen the public high school. You might be wondering why I made that choice. For me, I wanted a smaller class size so I could have more one-on-one time with my teachers. Overall, my experience has been positive. I'm receiving a quality public education, and part of the reason is from the quality of our teachers. Two of my favorite teachers are Mrs. Hackmuth and Mr. Chapin. Mrs. Hackmuth teaches literature and writing, and she is one of the hardest teachers. She is very particular. I haven't always liked that, but she has made me become a better student and a better writer. She has high standards, and I like the challenge of being able to reach those standards. Mr. Chapin teaches social studies. I like his class because he not only teaches us history, but he helps us learn time management and the skills needed to work successfully in groups. I'm worried that if our public charter school does not receive the same funding as other public schools, that we will lose quality teachers like Mrs. Hackmuth and Mr. Chapin. I wish my school offered additional classes that would help me decide my career path. I would love to take a business class or a political science class or even a criminal justice class. But because of the unequal funding, my public charter school does not offer these classes. I don't understand all the funding issues, but I do want you to know that my education should be worth the same as my brother's. I am worth educating. Please support House Bill 3397. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
I am Mason Mills from the City View Charter School that has been around for the last 7 years. I am in support of House Bill 3397 because at City View, we do have a great public educational system. We have an EL learning-based system, which we get to benefit tremendously from. It is a system where instead of just reading from your textbook, you get to go out, walk out to the park, and study the stream. We don't just sit around and read about a bird. We would walk out to a park and watch the birds for an hour. We also have smaller classes, which allows us to get extra help if we need it after class. It also allows us to get more one-on-one time with the teacher so they can know our struggles and our strengths. But after 3 years, we lose that teacher. We lose them because the other schools offer them more money because they are an experienced teacher. I urge you to support this bill because it would give us and my fellow classmates equal funding so that we can pay those teachers just as much as the other schools will to keep them around for more than just 3 years. We could also use the funding to get an actual playground, bigger than just the unused end of a parking lot and a barred dome in a dumpster. The funding to build up the facilities for our school, the funding to get a larger computer lab, with enough computers so that more than one class can use the computer lab at a time. Unfortunately, this bill won't actually affect me. I'm moving to high school next year, and I'm not going to a charter high school. But this will affect my brother and my sister. They will be better prepared than I was, and that is why I support this bill. Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much. Please.
Good morning, co-chairs Bernhardt and Berger, and members of the House Revenue Committee. My name's Tara O'Neill, and I'm the administrator at the Emerson Charter School in downtown Portland. Thank you for hearing my testimony today in support of House Bill 3397. I'm here to urge you to support this bill because it is a step toward funding equity for all public school students in Oregon. In Oregon, our public school funding is intended to follow the student to whatever public school they attend. Because of unforeseen recent growth in charter schools, we've created an unintentional two classes of public school funding. There's district school funding, which is 100% of the per student funding, and there's charter school funding, which, as you've seen, is quite a bit less than that. The unspoken and unintended result is that we have two classes of public school communities. One that's able to receive the full benefit of state public school funding, and one that isn't. This bill will make great progress toward correcting that unintended inequity. With the current law, the remainder of the charter students' funding that is retained by sponsoring districts has no restrictions on how it's used. The payout of the charter students' funding to districts has been at the expense of public school students at charter schools. This bill would require that districts use the remaining 5% of the per pupil funding for charter school support. Charter school students should not have to pay a price, literally, with their funding for attending the public school choice of their parents. Unfortunately, our current law inadvertently allows for exactly that. This funding belongs to the students to fund their education at the public school that they go to. As public school employees, it's incumbent on us to advocate for equity for all public school students. And House Bill 3397 will help ensure this equity. and I urge you to support it. Thank you for hearing my testimony, and I welcome your questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. My name is Shannon McClure, and I am a fifth grade teacher at Portland Village School in Portland, which is a Waldorf-inspired charter school. I'm also a founding board member of Bridges Public Charter High School, which was just approved for opening in September of 2012. As a teacher in both of these arenas, I am a highly qualified teacher. I maintain my Oregon certification. I'm active on several school committees. I run after-school programs that are free for families. I teach movement classes because we, you know, don't have a physical education teacher. I can also be found volunteering in school gardens, painting chalkboards, painting walls in classrooms, assembling desks. Students at Portland Village School are eager to attend school every day. They are exceeding state benchmarks. I just administered the OAKS tests the last 2 weeks, and their results are phenomenal. As a teacher in the charter school system, I can feel the inequity of funding on a daily basis. My own child qualifies for free and reduced lunch. I do not have medical coverage for my 8-year-old son through the school. I also run a summer camp that's 7 weeks long, and that helps to supplement my income. This means that our teachers that are exceeding state benchmarks are not being supported. Those preparing students who are from diverse communities, who are at poverty level, we're preparing those students to excel. Yet at the very same time, we are struggling to make ends meet for ourselves. So I urge you to support House Bill 3397. And this is very important for not only our children, but also highly qualified teachers in the charter school system. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony. We have a large number of other people, and that's the end of the panels I have, so I'm going to call people three at a time to come forward. You may or may not agree with each other, but please give your testimony, and we'll ask questions of each panel at the end. Wes Rogers, Mike Hyder, Ken Woody.
Mr. Chair, while they're coming forward.
Yes, Representative Berger.
I just would like to thank the children who testified. This is a very intimidating venue, and I appreciate them coming forward.
Yes, thank you, Representative. I completely agree with that, and we especially appreciate the testimony of the students who can tell us about their experiences in their schools. Gentlemen, please.
Good morning, Chair Barnhart and members of the committee. My name is Wes Rogers. I'm the business manager for Oregon City School District, and I'm here to speak about the impact of this bill on a local school district and provide you some context for what's happening in Oregon City. Currently, we serve and sponsor 4 charter schools, grades K to 12, approximately 700 ADMW. We have about approximately 404 K-8 ADMW spread throughout those 4 charter schools. If this bill were to pass, Oregon City would have to increase our charter school payments by approximately $356,000. We're currently facing a budget shortfall next year, projected at around $9.2 million. So you can see that we would be forced to find additional budget reductions in our other school programs to offset this increase in charter school payments. We find it very difficult to meet additional financial mandates at this time, and we would then, of course, oppose House Bill 3397 as it's currently written. We're very supportive of our charter schools. We feel like we have very good relationships with them. But again, we are forced in this unfortunate financial situation to where we just want to try to limit the amount of reductions that we're having to do. So I appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you very much. Please.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. My name is Mike Heider. I'm Director of Special Programs for the Oregon City School District. And I want to reinforce what Russ Rogers, our business manager, said, that we are supporters of charter schools. We have four in our district. We have about 8,000 students, and there's about 10% of those students are currently enrolled in one of our four fine charter schools. What I thought would be helpful to bring to the conversation is just to reinforce the issue that charter schools in a district do require oversight. The typical activities, if you boil it down, is that districts have to review, approve, or deny charter school applications. There's ongoing monitoring of charter schools. There's annual reporting, and there's determining if charter schools should be revoked or renewed. In the Oregon City School District, it looks like we identify one person that it's the main liaison. In Oregon City's case, that's me. There's monthly meetings that we hold with charter schools to talk about their needs, district needs, et cetera. And the district staff visits charter schools throughout the year in addition to the annual required site visit. In addition, then, there's support and consultation from all of our departments, whether it's ELL, coordination of professional development, or curriculum updates, oversight and consultation on the budget, staffing as it relates to highly qualified facilities, nutrition, maintenance, delivery of special ed, accounting, payroll, and those vary depending on the type of charter school it is. However, those are impacts on our school as far as providing proper oversight. Although the funds that are not currently passed through were never targeted for charter schools, at least that's what our understanding was. I think we did want to underscore that a proper oversight of charter school does impact resources. As business manager Rogers mentioned, Oregon City's cutting over $9 million next year. And we anticipate that's going to be a combination of, although we're negotiating, staff concessions and cuts, program cuts, although there's not much left to cut, and an estimated 20 days of no additional schools. If 3397 passes, this will place further stress on this system, and it will impact oversight, which I think is bad for charter schools and bad for the district. So thank you to Chairman Barnhart and the committee for your time.
Thank you very much.
Chairman, I'm Ken Woody. I'm director of the West Lane Technical Learning Center. It's a charter high school, Fern Ridge School District, sponsored about 14 miles west of Eugene. It's a hybrid online school. We have 120 students. We also run an auto and electric vehicle program for students in our area, Elmira High School, and a couple other schools that have dropped their auto programs. We handle 45 students in that area and receive no compensation for that. I came here to offer you encouragement because I think you need it, and I think you have a hard job. My good friends here give you the district perspective. Mine is respectful of where they come from, but it's totally different. This is about kids. This is about equality, and that's it. Looking at it in very simple terms, that's what this is. If you want to look at it in a complicated way, you can talk about, well, we're going to have to make cuts. We're under a lot of duress. My personal opinion is that duress is a good thing. We're talking about equality for kids or maintaining the status quo as best we can. Look at what the status quo is delivering to our state right now. Achievement is dubious. The results are dubious. If you talk to kids in high schools or schools around the state and ask, why are you in school, a lot of them have no idea. There's a lack of relevance to the students. The kids that we get at our school are 2 to 3 years behind in credits. They're high school kids. They have 40% have reading and math levels of fifth grade or lower. They are coming from a system that either has underserved or been unable to serve them. Charter schools, in many ways, take up the clientele, if you will, that do not fit or have a particular niche outside the traditional system. So if you want to make it more complicated, you can talk about the cuts to the status quo. My personal opinion is we could do a lot of things differently, and it's about time we start thinking of doing that. If that's connected to that bill, fine. My point is that the kids that come to my school, life is not fair for them. It's not equal. A lot of them don't have parents. They live with grandparents. They live with friends. They're transient. Nothing's been fair. The one thing that could be fair is the funding that is for the students. My students are just as worthy of the full financial support of the state as any other students. I appreciate the time that you've taken to hear this. And, again, I give you encouragement because you do not have an easy job. But if I were in your shoes, I'd say, hey, you know, it's either about the kids or status quo. Where am I going to be on this?
Thank you very much. Representative Berger.
Yes, I want to move this ahead so quickly. This is probably for staff, but it was my understanding that high schools, charter high schools at this point, K 8 through 12, do get 95%. And does
9
this,
through 12, yes.
And so does this not change? That does not change for high school.
Well, I think there is a, if you look at the part of the bill, page 2, there's a section that refers to other kinds of funds.
So it would add the other funds to the high school?
State and federal money if the money was received for public charter schools.
Got it. That's the difference. Thank you.
Right.
I just wanted to get...
Thank you. Other questions for this panel? Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just so I'm clear on this, $356,000 that you're speaking of, is that sum that those who are in the still public, not charter school enjoy as a result of the creation of the charter schools? In other words, but for the creation of the charter schools, that money would have been spread over the entire group. Once the charter school is created, does that mean then that those that aren't in it enjoy that $356,000 just by virtue of the creation of those charter schools? In other words, are they inadvertently benefited by the creation of the charter schools, those who aren't in them?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Bentz, that is true for those students who join that charter school who come from our other public schools in Oregon City School District, because those students were in our schools, and we were receiving all the funding for those, and we're retaining those in our regular budget. Students who join one of our four sponsored charter schools who come from outside the school district or outside of our normal district-operated schools, those do take that funding, and then we retain, if they're a K-8 student, we would retain that 20% for operations of the school district in general. So it's I'd say it's yes and no. No for students who are coming who weren't part of the public school system before, maybe were homeschooled or some other form of schooling, or for students who are coming from outside of the school district. Those students who do come from within the school district, yes, that would be true.
Thank you.
Thank you. Could you give me, Oregon City, can you give me an idea what your central office percentage is compared to the total budget?
Chair Barnhart, the information that we've distributed publicly uses the chalkboard study, which is done by, which shows averages of, they take the same information that was presented earlier, but they break it down into different categories. And Oregon City for central administration spends less than the state average. It's approximately 2.1%.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions? Thank you, gentlemen, very much. We appreciate your testimony. Hannah Cook, Morgan, it looks like Urton. And Max Burns. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning. Do you want to go ahead?
Sure. Okay. My name is Morgan Urton, and I'm a student at the Malala River Academy's Charter School. And we need funds for projects, field trips, experiments, and more. My teacher, well, my favorite teacher that I've ever had, and this is my second year at an academy, at a charter school like this, but my teacher, Mr. Garitano, and Ms. Cook like to do projects with us. Obviously, we need funds to do this. I asked my teacher, why do we do this? He says that he likes us to experiment. He he's not the kind of teacher that is always standing up there, and he likes us to have fun, and so we like to experiment with that. At the beginning of the year, we learned about gravity, Isaac Newton's laws of motion, momentum, acceleration, and so much more. To tie these together, we put them into a project, and we did marble tracks. For the marble track, we had rules, like we had to choose partners, and we had a minimum track, and we don't only have to pay for supplies, but we like to have field trips at our school, and last year I had four, and this year I haven't had one, and I learned so much from my last field trip. We went to the beach and studied ocean life, and my school and I ask that you give us the funds to do this again. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Please.
Hello, I am Hannah Cook, and I'm from Malala River Academy also, and I'm a sixth grader this year. And before I came to a charter school, I went to this elementary school, and I had gone through it K through fourth. And when I went there, they were accidentally teaching us the wrong math. But when I came to this academy, I learned so much more, and I got so much better at math. And it just helped me so much. And our main focuses at this Malala River Academy is science and art. We can't always do fun things, though. In science, for example, we were learning how to make circuits, and with copper wires, batteries, and light bulbs, and much more. And sometimes when Mr. Garitano was teaching us this, we didn't really understand it. But then when he showed us it, we understood it much, much more. But sometimes, now that we don't have a lot of money in our charter schools, we don't get to do that kind of stuff, so he can just explain it, but we don't get it as much. The people who are representing the charter schools today know their students have the same value as the elementary schools and the middle schools. My parents wanted me to go to a charter school because bad things can happen in middle school, like inappropriate stuff. And when I came to this school, there are 50 students in 6th and 7th grade. Because it is small and easy to discipline. So I ask you to pass this bill so we can have more money to do more things. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Burns.
Good morning, co-chairs Berger and Barnhart and the distinguished staff of the Revenue Committee. I attend Redmond Proficiency Academy in Redmond, of course. I'm a senior there.
I'm sorry, would you state your name for the record?
Max Burns, sorry.
Thank you.
A little closer. I don't like the mics.
You're doing fine.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm here today, I guess, I know that I probably have the envy of a lot of students. I get the 95% at my school. And if it wasn't for that funding, I probably wouldn't be here talking to you today. I haven't done a lot of opportunities in my school. We're brand new. Last 2 years we've been open. But through our school, we've given so much to our community. We've offered – we have kids enrolled from districts all around Central Oregon. And so we bring in the funding for our district from, you know, we have 95%. Wow. Sorry, I need to slow down real quick. So the 95% that students require to get their funding, it's theirs. Students all around the state get 95%, and I believe earlier it was 2.2% of Oregon's students are charter. They deserve that funding as well. It's their money. I mean, it's comparable to college. Kids aren't told where they go to college like they are in high school. They get to choose where they go, and their funding goes with them. Their FAFSA, their federal aid, that goes with them. So that's the comparison I see as it. And I would just encourage your guys' support for this bill. It would give students like these two the opportunities that me and my other students that are here with me today have. I mean, we get to come here. We get to sit in on this. We get to get a sooner, later we get actually get have a tour of the building here and learn about Capitol Hill a lot more. And I think that's something that every student that's a charter should benefit from, because they chose the alternate education. They took the risk. I mean, not all charter schools work. I mean, the funding does tank eventually for a lot of schools, it sounds like, from earlier testimonies. But it doesn't mean the education's back. That's why they're there, is the alternate route. So that's my testimony, and thank you for listening.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for this panel? Thank you. Yes, Representative Bailey.
Just a comment, Mr. Co-Chair, that we might be getting a preview of what the 2025 legislative session might look like in terms of...
we might indeed. Thank you, Representative Bailey. Very good. Stephanie Hussman and your panel. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair and members of the House Committee. The House Revenue Committee. My name is Stephanie Hausman, and I live at 3132 Southeast 28th Avenue in Portland. That is District 42, Representative Bailey's district. And I am a parent at the Emerson School in Portland, Oregon. And I want to introduce, this is my daughter, Uma Frost Hausman, and her friend, Emily Fox. And they are students at the Emerson School in second and third grade. And first of all, I want to state that I specifically sought out and chose the Emerson School and was one of the lucky lottery winners. It really felt like winning the lottery when we received our call a couple of years ago, because there's a lot of people are desiring to get into the Emerson School. And I chose a school when I could have chose my neighborhood school, and I also could have chose a private school education for my children. I chose a school because of its innovative approach, its project-based approach, because of the quality of the teaching that I observed, and as an educator myself, I wanted something different for my students than a traditional education experience. And I chose the school despite some of the hardships that it experiences. So the inequities in funding, I have to drive my children downtown from Southeast, and I have to pay for parking on a daily basis. My children don't have a playground like they would at their neighborhood school. They don't have much of the same facilities that are offered at neighborhood schools, after-school activities, and so forth. So I support House Bill 3397 because I feel that it's really a matter of equity, providing our children funds that, as public school students, they are entitled to. Our teachers chose to teach at Emerson despite earning 20% less than other public school teachers in the districts and in the district, and these teachers are very committed. There is very little turnover at Emerson. And with these funds, additional funds, they could be earning at least an equal amount to their counterparts in other public schools. The funds could help with building improvements. So our school is very small. Please come visit if you have a chance. We do not have a library. We don't have a lunchroom. We don't have a gym or an auditorium as most public schools do. So there's very limited space for us even to meet as a school community. We oftentimes gather very closely in a very small space. Yet we do have a second floor of the building that is empty. And possibly with some of these funds, that second floor could be retrofitted to provide additional facilities for our students. Our staff has limited professional development opportunities. These funds could widen those opportunities for them. We're a positive discipline school. We're a model school in many ways, and we're excelling in many ways and could excel in even more ways or share that wealth with other schools. We have some artists in residence that are brought in through fundraising, but we do not have a permanent arts program like many other schools, which additional funding could possibly provide. We only have a few computers, so with the additional funding, we could purchase additional technology that could augment Emerson's project-based approach. Our school is, I would say, 100% behind this bill, and my assistants here have some cards These are postcards from students and parents that we are planning to distribute to the chair, to the members of the committee on behalf of the students and parents at Emerson. So we have tried to organize people, and we have some representation here, and there would be more if we could have the funds for buses and things like that.
Thanks.
Would you like to say anything? So I do hope that you will support these children and the other children at Emerson and all of the other charter schools in our communities. Thank you very much for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much. And if you want to leave cards with the committee, Carol Phillips will be happy to take them.
Okay.
And we're very pleased to have them and also your testimony. Questions for Stephanie? Thank you. And thank you, girls, for coming this morning.
Thank you.
Tori Albello Daniels, Fred Yates, Josh Smith. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Tori Albello Daniels, and I go to Arthur Academy, and I'm in fifth grade. I'm here because I feel like that everybody should be the same, just like as the black and white. The black and white, the black didn't have some opportunities as the white did, and I think it should be equal, as the same as our school, and our school and public schools. I was in public schools for 3.5 years, and I was not doing so well. I wasn't getting one-on-one time, and now that I've gone to Arthur Academy, for a year, and I've been doing way better. I've improved on my math, reading, and writing, and my printing.
Thank you very much. Gentlemen.
Hello, I'm Joshua Smith. I'm from Armadillo Technical Institute in Medford. I'd like to say that with my experiences, charter schools can either make or break a student's educational career, which will then make or break their entire lives. When I was in ninth grade, I went to the high school down there, South Medford High, and the environment was so bad for me that I got into serious trouble with the law and dropped out not 2 months in. And it wasn't until my sophomore year that I found Armadillo, and it's been a little over a year and a half since then, and my grades have been phenomenal throughout the whole way, and I'm graduating this fall, 8 months before the seniors of the same age. And after that, I'm going to college to get my degree in English and literature. And I just wanted to say that charter schools help a lot and that we love our school. The problem is we don't have enough money to get more students. And if this bill got passed, then we could get more teachers and more students, more lives led to success. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Yates.
Good morning, Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. My name is Fred Yates. I'm from Linn County. Although this is a new concept in the state of Oregon, I came from a basically charter school 50 years ago. It's a small country school. And I've witnessed the decline of education in our nation ever since. I represent the generation that invented integrated circuits, put a man on the moon, invented Apple computer. I know Steve Jobs personally, and we've created the personal computer revolution. As I was waiting to testify for the next bill up, I had a chance to interview some of the students standing outside. What a remarkable difference they were compared to others that I've interviewed in the past. They stood there, they were attentive, they answered my questions articulately, and when I challenged them, they had a reply. They just didn't. It's just amazing that the charter schools work so good here, and they work so good when I was in school. Our schools are about 43rd in the nation and here in Oregon. I can't keep track of it. It was 48, it was 47. I think they might have managed to make it up to 43. But if I look at the charter schools and look at the amount of people graduating from them, they would be probably in the top five or maybe even first in the nation. The young man outside told me, well, 16 out of 17 of our graduating class went to college. In Lebanon, where I live, barely 30% of them go to college. So there's a big disparity, and here they are doing it on a much lesser budget. Speaking of budgets, there seems to be a big problem. Two of the gentlemen testified before how much money their school system is losing, but yet last year the legislature or somebody here stole $150 million from the public school system and gave to DHS. This year it's in the budget to steal another $220 million and give it to DHS. Why are we cutting schools when DHS is getting the money that belongs to the schools? Okay. My last point is these charter school students represent our future rulers. You've heard them. Okay, a sixth grader that spoke to you articulately, I was impressed. Please fund them equitably, and I'll answer any questions, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Before we do other questions, I want to particularly congratulate Tori and Fred for doing so well in school, and Fred, good luck in college. I think you're going to have fun.
Gosh. He's Josh.
I'm sorry.
We're twins.
I'm doing it again, only normally I do it with Representative Juan.
Yeah. But,
they all look alike.
Josh, thank you, and good luck in college. We have at least one question. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it's more of a comment. And I also want to congratulate all of the students who've done just a phenomenal job this morning, and I hope you keep coming back to the legislature. Just two clarifying points. There has been no money that has been taken from K-12 schools and shifted to the Department of Human Services. I'd be happy to follow up with you offline, but we have not shifted any general fund money from our K-12 schools to the Department of Human Services, and I think if you were to go and look at what's happening in the Department of Human Services, you would see that they are desperately struggling, and they are really the underdogs in the funding fight here in the state capitol. I think the other thing that's important is when advocating for schools, what the great thing about charter schools is that they offer flexibility and a variety of options for kids, because not every kid learns the same way. But I would just caution people in their testimony to recognize that we have lots of kids across the state who are very articulate that attend traditional public schools. And it's important when advocating for one type of school to not denigrate the other. I don't necessarily think that that is the intention, but that's certainly the way some of the testimony is starting to tilt, and I think we need to be respectful of the articulate and successful students that we have in all of our schools across the state, the innovative students that we have in those, and we've heard about some wonderful projects here today, but I can tell you that each of those projects has been done by my own children in their traditional bricks and mortar public schools, where they have vastly more kids in their classrooms, even though they are receiving that full complement of funding. So I just urge people to, you know, be careful about those comparisons, and let's respect all students across the state, including those in bricks and mortar schools.
Thank you, Representative. And thank you, panel. We appreciate your testimony today, and good luck in the future. David Williams, Lori Sattenspiel. Are they in the other room?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Lori Sattenspiel for the Oregon School Boards. I apologize, running in from the hallway. Here to talk to you today about concerns on House Bill 3397. We would all like more funding. As of 03, the biennium 03-05, K-12 districts received a high of 44% of the general fund, and now we're at 38. Just like to say, now is not the time to talk about funding switches. Out of breath here. It's my understanding, what I was hearing from out in the hallway, references to districts receiving $10,000 a student. And I've heard it in the past from others, and if I'm have the number wrong, I'm going to talk about that a little bit more. I talked with the department, and I wish they were here to talk more about the funding so we could all be on the same page with it. You take all monies that go into education, restricted funds, general operating funds, and then you divide it by how many students we have in the system. Your average number is going to be somewhere between $9,000 and $10,000. Okay, you dig down into that number. Districts that have weighted students, whether they be ELL, poverty, pregnant and parenting, are weighted. Your typical student, white, Caucasian, not ELL, not on an IEP, that average student receives for the district $5,700. So I just wanted to clear that up. Now, Title I funds are restricted. So those aren't dollars that actually follow the student. They're used for services to students, wherever the student is, and the district does provide that. For time here, I want to let David speak to some of these as well. Charter funding is a minimum in statute. Districts negotiate if they want to produce more money to the charter school. Representative Gelser commented about Corvallis. I do have testimony from them about and I will submit that as well, and you mentioned that. Reynolds School District has K-8s that they pass already 95% through. They've negotiated with them locally for that. In my haste, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, David Williams with Portland Public Schools, expressing significant concern about the bill before you today, and a couple of things to highlight. I do want to highlight one piece that Ms. Satinspiel mentioned, and that is about our title categorical federal funds. We have significant legal concerns about our ability to pass those funds through to charter schools based on student counts. Those are service-based dollars that are used to provide broad-spectrum program across the district. I also want to sort of talk about the role of charter schools in the district. And so Portland Public Schools currently has 7 charter schools on the ground right now, and we have 2 state-sponsored charter schools within our boundaries. We have another one coming online next year and one the year after. So we will have 9 district-sponsored public charter schools in the district. And we really view those charter schools as not just partners with the district, but as key parts of the district's program that we offer to our kids. We really look to charter schools to provide certain focused curriculum and certain focused education that the district doesn't have the bandwidth to be able to provide, or for whatever reason hasn't provided to this time. And so charter schools really are a part of that component. And just as any of our schools inside the district, not every individual school or every individual kid is funded at 95% or 100% of, if you take our total revenue and divide it by the number of kids we have in the district. I've heard a $10,000 number bandied about. Not every kid is funded at that $10,000. Our program is spread where it is needed. It's not spread as a thin layer across the district. So really, this kind of goes against the grain of how we view charter schools, I think, and how we've written our charter school law in the state, where charters are really meant to be a component of a district operation and meant to serve that purpose. I also would highlight the fact that charters operate under a contract with the school district, obviously within the frameworks of state statute. There is nothing in that contract that bars a charter school from negotiating a higher reimbursement rate with a school district or additional services or additional pass-throughs from the school district. I will, of course, readily admit I don't believe there is any district that pays a higher rate than the current statutory rate available. I will note that when Congress passed the federal EduJobs and ERA stimulus funds, Portland Public Schools passed those dollars through to our component charter school districts because they were facing the same fiscal problems that the district as a whole was facing. So I have significant concerns, obviously sensitive to your time. If you have questions, I'm happy to answer those.
Thank you.
Mr. Co-Chair, I have a question.
Representative Bailey and then Representative Wand.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I'm curious if you could just address, I'm trying to get my head around the technicalities of this bill, the rationale behind the bifurcation between high school and non-high school students in the 95% and 80% share. What was the original reason for that, and what are the dynamics around changing that?
Mr. Chair, Madam Co-Chair, Representative Bailey, I wasn't in the 99th session when we drafted the bill, so I'm not totally confident on the rationale behind the split. I'd be happy to do a little research and get back to you. I know Mr. Green, who a lot of you know, was here and was key in the drafting of that legislation. I'm sure we can figure out better that rationale. I'm just not confident enough to speak on the record about it.
Mr. Chair, if I might. Representative Bailey, what is my understanding is that the K-8s were not as expensive to operate as the high school programs, and that's all the background that I can add to that.
On the same topic?
Yes, yes, Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I kind of on that same topic, when I served as a school board member and we looked at how we divided dollars out, certainly dollars never followed a student. We would allocate more to high-poverty schools than low-poverty schools. It was more expensive to operate the high school than it was to operate an elementary school just because of the different personnel that were there. And I believe that those rates were intended to reflect that. And just that general principle that even though we fund on an ADM to get that formula, in no place, in no district, in no school in the state does an ADM, does a dollar follow a student. It doesn't happen in charter schools. It doesn't happen in traditional public schools.
Thank you. Representative Wand.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I'm so pleased that the two of you are here to talk to us today, because I think it's very important that the folks from Portland Public Schools, the folks from the Oregon School Boards Association get on board with some of the key issues that we're talking about in Salem right now. And the key issue that is in this room but nobody's talking about is the tax base and jobs. We're not having this discussion if our unemployment rate wasn't in the top five in the nation. We're not having this discussion if our median income level wasn't 10% lower than the state of Washington. And what's critical to me is to keep in mind that it is primarily the folks in Portland that were pushing land use policies, that were pushing other types of issues on the rest of the state, impoverishing rural areas of this state, hampering their ability to pay for their own schools. I hope to see both of you in Judiciary Committee the next time we have a bill that will help create jobs and increase this tax base for our state so that we don't have to worry about whether we have enough money for charters, public schools, community colleges, or universities. I welcome your support for those jobs growth packages.
Thank you, Representative. On House Bill 3397, Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a follow-up to those comments. I think
is it on this bill?
It is related to this bill and the money that is available.
Please, go ahead.
I think it's important to point out that our unemployment rate, our jobs, that will improve the situation. But before our unemployment rate was high, when times were good, we still were not funding our quality education model. We have disinvested in our public schools after the passage of Measure 5 and Measure 50. And if we had a property tax system and a school financing system that made sense, we would be able to have these conversations and provide better options for all kids, whether they are in charter schools or public schools. This is an issue of policy choices that people have made through the initiative system that have gutted our school system and gutted our financing for them, and it has cheated all of the kids in this room and all across the state from the quality education that they deserve. And I hope that we'll have an opportunity to address that and improve the resources that are available for our kids, because they deserve them, all of them.
Thank you. If I may, that's one each. I want to.
Can we each get?
This is to the bill.
I want to stick to the bill. I want to note that I have several more people who want to be heard this morning. Some of them have come from long distances, so let's make it very brief.
Yes,
if you would, please, Representative Brewer, and then Representative Wand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To me, you mentioned the $5,700. So, if that's the number, the variable number, in my world as an accountant, I have variable costs and I have fixed costs. And the $5,700 per student is ADM weighted. So by its mere fact, it's weighted from the state's perspective for funding on a weighted student per average. We also heard earlier, Representative Gelser said that we must treat all students, whether in
a non-charter public school versus a public charter school is equal, and I think you probably walked in just right after that comment. If we are to treat all students equal, and if the $5,700 is a variable funding because of a variable cost, why then would we not treat a charter school student equally on the variable cost on the weighted average formula as we would a student who is not in a charter school? Why is that so problematic, recognizing that charter schools are public schools? So can you speak to the variable costs with the variable cost burden and the treatment of equality of the students?
Mr. Chair, Representative Brewer, excellent question. I will note several of the weights in the formula are directly associated with costs of service delivery in school districts. I know we've had a lot of conversations in other committees, for instance, around special ed and the weights that school districts get in that avenue. Of course, special ed is strictly the responsibility of the public school district. We are the legal entity that, to put it bluntly, that will get sued if we are not providing appropriate education for the child. So a lot of those costs that are variable in the system are costs that are the legal requirement of the school district to deliver those services. Now, there are instances where some of those services may be contractually delivered by the charter school, but it is still the responsibility of the school district to deliver those services to the kids wherever they are inside of our system.
Aren't you weighted in that formula, though, for the special needs students?
Mr. Chair, Representative Brewer, there is that additional weight in the formula up to a total of 11% of our population. Almost every school district in the state exceeds that 11%, so it does not accurately cover all of the cost. I will also note the federal IDEA statute that requires delivery of special ed services as well. When that bill was created, it was promised that 40% of the funding would come from the feds, and we're about 18% and have never gone over 20%. So it is an area of education funding that is woefully underfunded in the system and yet still a key part of district service delivery.
Yes, Representative Brewer, please follow up.
Thank you. Just to follow up, then if we were to go to a 95% funding for charter schools, that leaves 5% on the table on a weighted average. Is that 5% not sufficient in a variable cost model here, because that's what we're talking about in a weighted average formula, in a weighted formula, is that 5% not sufficient then to cover the additional burden for students not enrolled in charter schools for the weighted average cost for your other weighted students?
Mr. Chair, Representative Brewer, excellent question. We don't believe the 5% is enough remaining for us to deliver the kinds of specialized programs district-wide that we do deliver. As I said, not every kid in every school is funded at 95% across the board. I will note, in Portland Public Schools, we think we have driven as much funds to the classroom as possible. We have about a 4% administrative load, which is about half of the national average for urban school districts. We try very hard to deliver as many programs directly to kids as possible, and I think that those numbers bear that out. But again, it's not a system where those services are delivered directly to a kid in a school. They're delivered more on a district-wide basis than they are on an individual school basis. The other concern, of course, is that in this bill, we are not strictly talking about formula revenue. We are also talking about all revenue the district receives, that it receives based on a per-student basis. And there are a lot of funds and a lot of ways that funds are distributed, federal and otherwise, that an easy metric for delivering those funds in a statewide or national basis is on a per-student basis. They're not intended to be spent on an individual kid. They are intended to be spent on district-wide services, yet they are received basically on a per-student basis, and this bill would require us to pass all of those funds through to the charter school.
And if I might add, Mr. Chair,
please.
I've got a couple of letters here from Lincoln County, from Reynolds, and from Corvallis to talk about some of the support services the amount of time that the administration support and oversight responsibilities that the district has in relation to the district itself, including the charter school. And that might be answering some of your questions about the amount of time that curriculum is spent support of the charter schools, filling out reports and those kinds of things. I believe that might be what you're asking.
Kind of, but thank you.
Does the committee have those letters?
No, I just...
Would you see that Carol gets them?
Thank you. Representative Wan.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I think that the policy choices are very important, and it's important to me that we're making policy choices for the right reasons. And my concern is that when you're talking about a 20% reduction for a K through 8 student, that I have yet to hear a single justification for why the school district should keep 20% for a K through 8 student and 5% for a 9 through 12 student. I mean, when we make these choices, I don't think that it's proper to make these choices based upon who has a stronger or more powerful lobby, based upon who is more aggressive in their lobbying tactics. I think we need to make these decisions on a scientific basis, on numbers, on policy choices, on what is best for children. And so I'm hoping to hear some rational basis for a 20% going to the school district for K through 8 and a 5% in 9 through 12.
Please.
If you have that, that'd be great.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wand, I'm not totally sure what the question is in there, but you know, I think we're not obviously the bill is not looking at a 20% reduction in funding for kids. All of the charter schools in our system signed up under the current law, knowing exactly what their funding would look like.
Let me just interrupt you if I could follow up, Mr. Co-Chair, please, so that my question's clear. I am interested in knowing why the original law allowed a 20% to the school district for K through 8. What was the policy justification for that? What is the school district doing to justify that? Because if I don't have the answer to that question, then it's very difficult for me to take a look at this bill and know what the right answer is.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wand, excellent question. And as I said, we'll do a little digging more on the rationale for why those numbers were created in the original statute. But before we leave this, I do want to just say Portland Public Schools obviously sees great value in the charter schools in our district. I think you had excellent testimony from a young woman from the LEAP Charter School in our boundaries. We think that, as I said before, these are a great way to augment the program in our district and provide additional services to kids who for whatever reason have not found a great setting in the traditional public school environment. These are great efficiency of program. They are obviously putting out wonderful young students in an environment where they're receiving 80% or 95% of the formula revenue or other supports. So I think that it certainly cannot be left that the wonderful job that the charter schools are doing in that environment, and we're happy to follow up and get you more information about that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I really need to go on. Is this real short?
It's real short on this point. I think to Representative Wan's question, I can put a finer point on what I'd said before. Because dollars, even when you're looking at the traditional schools within a school district, non-charter schools, we spend less per student in a K through 8 situation, especially a K through 5 situation, than we do in grades 9 through 12, just because of the structure of the school day, the number of personnel that are needed, the intensity of the coursework that's provided. If we were to increase that for charter schools, you would end up spending more per student on charter students in an elementary school than you are spending per student on a child attending a traditional district K through 5 school in most districts and in most cases. So if there's an equity, you have to go back and look at within the district, how much are you spending per head for students at a particular grade level?
Right. And I think this is an issue that we can follow up on later, because it does depend on the specific numbers and the personnel and so forth in the school systems. Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony. Jeff Miller, Scott, also from Opal School. Sorry, I can't read your last name. Beth Woods.
Good morning, and thank you for having us. My name is Beth Woods, and I'm speaking in support of House Bill 3397.
I'm a parent of two children at the Opal Public Charter School, and I'm also a member of the Opal Advisory Council at the school. The Opal School is one of the oldest Portland public charter schools, and we believe that and need equitable funding for our students and for our teachers. Opal is a very little place where very big ideas are incubated, tested, then published. These big ideas are shared with an international audience. Indeed, we just hosted some folks from Malaysia yesterday via a teleconference who are interested in the research and the learnings that are happening at Opal School. Each year, all of this research is published and it's presented in our symposiums, in our teacher visitation days, and in other forums where teachers come to see what's happening at Opal School. We're proud to be a Portland public school and part of that public school system, and we would love the equitable resources to continue to do the work that we as a charter have been charged to do. And we are very committed to doing this as we have been for the last 10 years. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Gentlemen?
My name is Scott Biniak, and I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak. I'm also an Opal parent. I have three kids. Two of my oldest are in Opal right now. I'm also a member of the Parent Teacher Council there, and I'm here to support House Bill 3397 because I've been inspired by the school, and I'm hoping that others will be too. I know that part of the reason that public school systems set up charters was to not only provide quality education to students, but also to help explore best practices in education in a rapidly changing and extremely competitive global economy. And the more I get involved in the school, the more it's apparent to me that the school has been a great source for that, and I would imagine there are other schools that have done the same. So I would like to see a lot of the learning and stuff that's coming out of the charter schools applied to the broader public schools. We're proud to be part of the public schools, and I think that the reason for the charter schools being set up is a good and wise decision. We did not find the appropriate support in the other immediate options in our neighborhood, so that's the reason why we went to the public schools. But we didn't go there intending to sit here in front of you and be asking for equitable funding. I am now because I didn't know it was inequitable before. So I thank you for your consideration.
Thank you.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. I'm Jeff Miller, a parent of two girls in Oregon public schools and also two girls in the charter schools. I have kids in both. And I'm a member of the Opal Public Charter School Advisory Council as well. To tell you a little bit more about what Opal's mission is, Opal not only educates its own students, but its Opal Public Charter School promotes innovation and insight into the wonder of how a child learns so that we can better educate all the children in the public school system statewide and around the world, as Beth mentioned. While we currently support professional teacher development by sharing this research and innovation via quarterly workshops, symposiums, and ongoing engagement with the community, schools with equal funding, we could do even more to enhance and support how they learn. The Opal Public Charter School's mission is to strengthen all of public education in Oregon by discovering fresh ideas about the amazing ways in which children see the world, experience the world, and most importantly, learn about the world around them so that they can realize the amazing potential in each of them. So with equal funding, we could do even more to spread these ideas throughout all of Oregon public schools. That's all.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Thank you very much. We appreciate your long wait and your testimony this morning. Michael Warner, Marcy Anderson, it looks like Anson Lackner, and Ryan Grenay. Like I called too many people, huh? Please, go ahead.
My name is Michael Warner. I'm co-director and developer for Armadillo Technical Institute in Phoenix, Oregon, which is one of the original 12 schools chartered under this
law. That's Josh's school, right?
Yes.
Thank you. Go ahead.
I'm also the past president of the Oregon Association for Alternatives in Education. I also served on the task force, the original task force for charter schools that was sponsored by Department of Education and the Oregon School Boards Association. I've been teaching for 30 years, and I helped write the OARs on school funding related to alternative education in the state. So most of you don't know me. I know Representative Gelser does, and Representative Barnhart and Representative Berger, thank you for allowing me to speak today. I'm struck by a number of things. First of all, I'm a history professor, or a history teacher, so I wish I was a history professor. I find it ironic that that the actual percentage we're talking about works out to approximately 3/5 of the whole when we're talking about issues of equity. Every argument that's been made here today was made when women entered the workforce, was made when African Americans were asking for equal rights, and it's being made again now. What I have not heard is anyone tell me that a school district is providing more of those other resources to their charter school than they're providing to their mainstream programs. Or at any level what that is. But let me tell you a little bit about my school, okay? We have the highest percentage of high-risk students in the county. We have the highest percentage of autism spectrum kids in the county. We have approximately between 25 and 30% of our kids are on IEPs. A student who comes into our program is a minimum of 3 to 4 years behind in math. Almost no one tests higher than pre-algebra. 2 years behind in reading. A high school student who comes in is, depending on what age they are, is anything from a half, in Josh's situation, somewhere between a semester and 2 years behind. So, for example, the 20-year-old student I have right now who will continue to work with past age 21 if he comes and does it until he graduates, we won't get funded for. But if he does the work, we'll do it. Okay, so the argument is the most expensive kids in our program are our middle school kids. So the argument is because mainstream only spends 80%, that has anything to do with the charter school. There are schools, approximately 22% of the students in this state for 10 years have received no funds from non-resident IEP districts. None. So, you know, I actually know the superintendent of Portland Public Schools, and I think she's a wonderful person, and I think, and this is not a battle for me between public schools and mainstream. When this is all over, later today, Representative Gelser, I'll be testifying at your committee in favor of something, or trying to protect our school district from something. We co-wrote our charter. When this is all over, if it's taken care of, we'll sit down and negotiate a way to make the transition so that it works. If the state sees fit to help those districts out that have been courageous enough to take on charter schools, I think that would be something I could support. But the state's had no problem kicking back. About 70% of our students were either on their way out of school or out of school when we get them. So if they're a non-resident IEP student, the state's had no problem kicking back half of the ADM to the district that hasn't served them. Don't seem to have a problem with that. If our school closed tomorrow, if our district was shrinking, the state would have no problem adding those students to the extended ADMW for the district, even though they serve none of them. That's about $600,000. This is an issue of equity. There's either equity or there isn't. We're not asking for equity, we're simply asking for more equitable. We provide free summer school for all of our kids and all the high school students in Phoenix Talent School District. We share services, we have kids who take classes there. We're the model about how it's supposed to be done. But it's not being done that way everywhere. And to argue that we could ask for more, in what situation can you come up where a group pays another group to administer the program to determine how much funds that program is entitled to? We don't get to do that for the school district. Why is your argument that they should get to do that for us? This is an issue of equity. I'd be more than happy to answer any questions you want. I want everybody else to have a chance. But thank you so much for letting me speak.
Thank you very much. I wish we had more time, but we don't. Please.
So on that note, I'll be brief, and I should have worn a tie. I see that is the better way to go. with this gentleman here. My name is Marcy Anderson, and I am a founder and current board member of Renaissance Public Academy in Malala. We are a classically based charter school, which in our small area isn't offered, so we offer something to our community that isn't already there. And I could talk forever about what we do and what we love and the years we spent doing it. But as I was coming here, I was thinking maybe on a bigger level. And the two main things that I thought about were two very American ideals, one being liberty, which charter schools have accomplished. Now parents have a choice. They have the freedom to choose. They have the freedom to say, this doesn't work for my child, but this does. We're going to go there. And then the other one would be equality, which is something we're here to talk about today. And I think that's just as important. If you've got the freedom to choose, you should also have the equality to be able to have the resources to make that choice. And I would say, too, that no matter how long an inequality has existed, it's always the right time to change it. And it's not about is there enough money or how much money is there. It's about whatever there is, you just divide it equally and just make sure that everyone has what they need to do what they need to do. And so I think that's all I want to say. And my children are also here in the back watching, and we wanted them to see this process. So thank you for giving us your time.
Thank you very much. Anson.
Dear representatives and guests, my name is Anton Wagner. I'm 5 years old, and I am in kindergarten at the Arthur Academy Church School in Woburn, Oregon. I'm a very good reader. At my school, I go to the first grade class for reading group, so I do not get bored in kindergarten reading group. I think a regular public school, I would get bored. At regular public school, you have to stay in your own class. I know a lot of schools need more money right now. I do not think giving them an Arthur Academy spot is the answer to their problem. It will only help them a little, and it will hurt us a lot. I would like to invite the principals from other schools to come to a class with me for a day so they can see that there is a new and better way. Thank you very much for letting me read to you today.
Thank you, Anson. We appreciate your testimony.
That's impressive.
Ryan, one of you may want to switch with him so he can get to the mic. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Ryan Grunet, and I'm a freshman at Trillium Charter School. In 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, I attended East and West Sylvan, and I was considered a failing student. I was failing most of my classes. After school, I would get into drugs, and it was not a good time for me. And then my parents were worried, so they looked into charter schools. And I know my friend told me about Trillium Charter School. When I went to Trillium Charter School, I began this year. And let me tell you, it has helped me so much. I'm getting A's and B's in all of my classes. If I ever have issues with anything, my teacher, Ken, will help me through it. And we are on like a person-to-person basis. It's not the usual teacher-student basis. He thinks of me as an individual learner, and it helps me. What concerns me, though, is the fact that there's even an argument of how much money we should get in as a charter school. We can't even afford a nurse, and you're expecting us to keep on going with the amount of money that we're getting. I think that seems greedy and a pointless argument. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you all. Are there questions for this panel? Thank you all. Yes, sir. Did you want to testify as well?
I'd just like to make a quick statement.
Please, and state your name first.
My name is Martin Lackner. I'm Anson's father.
I figured you might be.
I have 4 children. He's in the academy in the charter school, and I have 2 other children that are in public school. So I'm very familiar with both styles of education. But I'm also a college graduate in engineering, and that's what I do for a living. And if I have a structure that doesn't work properly and I need to replace it, I start from a level surface. And that's what I think everyone needs to look at here. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. That's very helpful. Any questions for this panel? Thank you all very much for coming today. I really appreciate the fact that many people, including those I can't see because they're in the other room, have come long distances to come and present for this bill. We appreciate your testimony, your concern, your interest, and especially your interest in the education of our students. Most of us here are here partly because we care a great deal about the future of Oregon and our civilization, and that means the education of our kids. So we appreciate that very much. And with that, we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3397. Colleagues, we had another matter for this morning, H.J.R. 14. We're going to hold that over until tomorrow. And that's the required notice, is it? Okay. Do we have anything else for the committee today? And if not, we are adjourned. Adjourned.